Dearly beloved in the hearts of Jesus and Mary, some years before the encyclical Humanae Generis of Pope Pius XII appeared in August of 1950, there were rumors in Europe that some kind of papal document was to come from the Vatican. The fact is that controversies on matters touching upon the very foundations of Catholic theology, and therefore the very foundations of our Catholic faith, were going on among Catholics and so-called Catholics, theologians, for a number of years. There was a need for a papal document in defense of the truth of the Catholic faith, lest serious harm result among the faithful as well as among the clergy. One of the early indications that the Holy Father would speak out and take action was an address delivered by him before the Jesuits of the world, who were assembled in Rome for the election of a new superior general on September the 17th, 1946. And this was 4 years before the appearance of the encyclical Humanae Generis. It was on that occasion that the saintly vicar of Christ spoke of a new theology, and he indicated how dangerous it can be. The Holy Father said to the Jesuits, "Much has been said, not always very clearly, about a new theology which should keep moving where everything else is moving, always on the way, never arriving." And remember, this is 1946. "If we were to accept such an idea," Pope Pius XII asked, "what would become of the unchangeableness of Catholic dogma and of the unity and stability of our Catholic faith?" And then the Holy Father indicated the guidelines that one must follow when any kind of new questions or new problems come up in theology or in our Catholic religion. "Where there is question of new or freely debated problems," he declared, "the principles of Catholic doctrine must be the guiding light. What sounds altogether new in theology should be examined carefully and cautiously. What is certain and firmly established should be distinguished from conjectures or guesswork, and from the passing and not always praiseworthy fads introduced into theology and philosophy." The Supreme Pontiff also issued a warning against the spirit of compromise which goes by the name of Irenicism or Irenism, of which he also spoke expressly in his encyclical 4 years later. To the Jesuits, he said, "Let us stretch out a loving hand to the erring, but let us have no compromise with error." It is a sad fact that so many are incapable of putting into practice this admonition of Pope Pius XII and invariably end up compromising the truth of the Catholic faith for fear of offending those who are in error. Thus, instead of putting God and truth first, they put man first, and man's feelings and opinions and views. A few days after speaking to the Jesuits, Pope Pius XII spoke to the Dominicans on September the 22nd, 1946, who were also gathered together in Rome for the election of a new superior general. The Holy Father spoke in praise of the illustrious Dominican, St. Thomas Aquinas, the Prince of Theologians, and then he admonished the Dominicans listening to him to tone down their theological controversies and put less emphasis on the questions and problems that are being so freely debated and discussed among Catholics. Instead, they should concentrate mainly on matters that touch upon the very foundations of theology and philosophy, and the very foundations of our Catholic faith, and the truths revealed by God to the Church. These, the fundamentals, are the main issue at stake today. He reminded the Dominicans that the system of theology built up by St. Thomas Aquinas was still the solid rock upon which defense of the sacred deposit of faith rests, and that it is still adequate and is still a safe guide in theology and philosophy. 2 months after speaking to the Dominicans, that is, on November 21, 1946, Pope Pius XII addressed the members of the International Congress of Philosophy, which convened in Rome at that time. Again, he made reference to a prevalent and very damaging error, this time to what is called existentialism, which goes by the existing ideas and fads and practices of men, while rejecting unchanging principles and laws and truths. The Holy Father called existentialism a philosophy of despair. He strongly urged his listeners to accept the solid basis which Catholic philosophy gives to Catholic doctrine. These examples show that the encyclical Humani Generis was long in the making and was not issued on the spur of the moment. The Holy Father knew well what was going on in theological and philosophical circles, and he took his time in preparing for the publication of his encyclical, which ranks in importance with the 1864 Syllabus of Errors of Pope Pius IX, with the 1907 Encyclical Fascendi of Pope St. Pius X on Modernism, as an official papal document condemning the errors of the day. Humani Generis is dated August 12, 1950. The first two words of the official Latin edition, Humani Generis, means the human race, but they do not by themselves indicate what the encyclical is all about, though the title of an encyclical oftentimes does indicate its subject matter. However, the heading of the encyclical clearly states that it concerns itself with some false opinions which threaten to undermine the foundations of Catholic doctrine. And the encyclical begins by stating that discord and error on religious and moral matters among members of the human race has always been a cause of deep sorrow to all good men, and above all to the true and loyal sons of the Church, especially today when we see the very principles of Christian culture being attacked on all sides. Today, of course, means 1950. We wonder how the Holy Father could word that opening sentence differently if he were writing his encyclical in our own day, right at this moment. What he wrote in 1950 is just as true at this very moment. But there is one big difference between 1950 and today, as we know so well, to our great sorrow, and that is that the false opinions of which Pope Pius XII wrote in 1950 have now become so widespread within the very bosom of the Church of God. What Pope Pius XII saw as threatening the very foundations of Catholic doctrine in 1950 has actually destroyed or badly damaged the faith of so many children of the Church, both clergy and laity, in these latter years. The encyclical is addressed expressly to the members of the hierarchy, as is the custom with encyclicals, because the bishops are the ones with the ordinary power of teaching and governing within their own dioceses, and they are responsible for what is being taught in their territory, that is, in their churches, schools, Catholic newspapers and magazines and so on. But it is evident that the encyclical was, and still is, of special importance to teachers of religion, especially to those of the higher institutions of learning, such as seminaries and universities. The technical language with which the Holy Father designates the various false opinions or errors would be understood by professors of theology and philosophy, but the ordinary faithful would not as easily grasp their meaning unless some simpler terms are used. But whatever name an error may go by, it is still error, and it is still just as damaging to the souls of men. The Holy Father states that it is no surprise to find error outside the Church. Human reason can, it is true, discover some of the truths of religion by the natural ability which God gave it, such as the fact of the existence of God, and it can know the moral law of God to a certain extent. But reason by itself is not enough. Divine revelation must come to the aid of human reason if man is to be absolutely sure of possessing the full truth in all its details. Unfortunately, because of original sin, man allows himself to be misled because of prejudice or passion or bad faith or imagination and so on, and he thus refuses to accept the full truth in matters of religion and morals. As the Holy Father puts it, men readily persuade themselves in such matters that what they do not wish to be true is false, or at least doubtful. He also tells how men shut their eyes to the available evidence and are deaf to the voice of God in their hearts. Thus Pope Pius XII indicated that he understood human nature, and as John the Evangelist said of Jesus, he knew what was in man. The Holy Father did not hastily excuse those in error by whitewashing them and saying that they don't know they are wrong, or they don't realize how wrong they are, or that they mean well. The wise Pope knew how perverse human nature shies away from the truth and avoids it. When speaking of the false opinions existing outside the Church, Pope Pius XII brings up the theory of evolution, which comes up again, as expected, when the Holy Father deals with error within the Church. The Vicar of Christ states that quite a few learned men outside the fold of Christ were so imprudent and discreet as to believe that the so-called theory of evolution, which has not yet been fully proven even in the domain of natural sciences, explains the origin of all things, and they go so far as to say that the whole world is in a state of continual evolution. He noted how communists used evolution as a means of spreading their atheism. The false principles of evolution have paved the way, Pope Pius XII declares, for various other errors, among them being what in his time already had come to be known as existentialism, and which, as we have already explained, rejects any unchangeable and eternal truths and principles and laws, but goes only for the existing ideas and customs and fads of the moment, which change from day to day. Evolutionism and existentialism also cause a false outlook on history, or as the brain people call it, a false historicism, which looks upon history merely as a disconnected series of happenings among human beings without regard to the absolute laws of history and to unchangeable truth. The Holy Father expressed satisfaction over the fact that quite a few non-Catholic scholars who had been rationalists were returning to the sacred scriptures as the source of truth and knowledge, and as the work of God. But he was saddened by the fact that they still failed to see the need of a living magisterium, or a living supreme teaching authority, to preserve divine revelation and to interpret it correctly. He said that their own disagreements among themselves on the interpretation of the scriptures should have shown non-Catholic scholars the need of a living magisterium. After devoting a few pages of his encyclical to errors outside the Church, Pope Pius XII goes into the main part of the encyclical, which deals with errors within the Church, that is, errors being propagated within the Church by Catholic theologians and professors and teachers. He declares that Catholic teachers should know well the errors being propagated outside the Church so as to be able to refute them when necessary and defend their true faith, but they must at the same time be on their guard lest they themselves, the teachers, be misled into accepting those errors and thus drag others along with them into error. He optimistically acknowledged that the vast majority of Catholic teachers guard themselves against the errors of the day, while some, he says, were being led astray into error. We do not know whether Pope Pius XII could have said the same thing in 1958, the year of his death, which he said in 1950. But we know all too painfully well that the same thing could not be said today of the vast majority of Catholic teachers, that is, that they supposedly guard themselves against the errors of the day. One of the main causes of error being accepted by Catholic teachers is that same itch for novelty, of which St. Paul wrote to Timothy in that famous passage about the itching ears of those who will not endure sound doctrine, as well as in other epistles. Pope Pius XII states that there are those who hanker too much after novelties and who dread being thought ignorant of the latest scientific findings. Thus, novelty seekers are led into the trap of error because their pride makes them afraid of being behind the times and behind the trends, and because, as it is said today, they want to be with it, even if it happens to be error. Novelty seekers gradually lose respect for the safe guidance of the infallible teaching authority or magisterium of the Church, and as the Holy Father points out, they lose hold of divinely revealed truth and draw others along with them into error. Besides novelty seeking, there is another danger that leads into error, and that is what Pope Pius XII calls irenicism, or ironism, to which we have already referred. He states that this proceeds from an imprudent zeal for souls. The zeal for souls is the zeal for bringing the souls of all together into one fold, but it is imprudent inasmuch as it disregards true doctrine. Such persons want above all to win souls for Christ, so they say, And they say they want to break down the barriers that divide good and honest men. But this is the very reason why their false notion of unity is all the more dangerous, since, as the Holy Father points out, it hides under the appearance of virtue. The false unity seekers may have a praiseworthy motive in desiring Christian unity, but their desire to compromise divinely revealed truths is not praiseworthy. As the Holy Father declares, such persons would destroy the very laws and principles taught by Christ the Lord in everything that Christ has instituted. Or, as they express it today, they would destroy the very structure of the Church founded by Christ. Such a destruction, Pope Pius XII states, would indeed bring about the union of all, but only a union in common ruin. And of what good is a unity of common ruin? The word irenicism or ironism comes from the Greek word for peace, and we might mention here that the feminine name Irene is literally the Greek word for peace. Irene means peace. The error of irenicism is a false notion of peace and unity among men, which is to be brought about by compromise and the destruction and dilution and watering down of divinely revealed doctrines. This erroneous idea wants to make all men live together happily and in peace, as they imagine, and not be bothered about doctrine. The Holy Father was a prophet when he wrote that the promoters of the new opinions might be propagating their errors under cover and cautiously in his time, but tomorrow those errors will be proclaimed from the housetops and without moderation by more venturesome spirits, he says. We have lived, much to our dismay and sorrow, to see that prophecy fulfilled, even though Pope Pius XII may not have intended it as a prophecy, but only as a statement of warning of what could happen. But it did happen, and it is happening right now. Error is being proclaimed boldly and without restraint. The Holy Father notes how the promoters of a new theology were advocating the abolition of the terminology which the Church has always adopted in expressing the various truths of the faith. But he does not give any specific example of such terminology. We know well how such a term as transubstantiation, to take just one example, has been a target of the modernist theologians. The new theology pushers would go back to the simple theology and terminology of the Scriptures, so they hypocritically claim. The terminology of the Fathers of the Holy Church. Thus, the Supreme Pontiff says, they would attract those outside the Church and would all gradually arrive at a mutual blending of Catholic dogma and the teachings of the separated brethren. But he says that such wrong-headed persons are out to whittle down as much as possible the content of dogmas. The lovers of the new theology were asserting in the time of Pope Pius XII that a change of Catholic doctrine would enable us to satisfy a modern need. The new theology would permit expressing dogmas according to modern thought and according to any of the modern isms, whether it be existentialism or evolutionism or any other ism. After all, they wrongly claim, the mysteries of the faith cannot be expressed by any adequate terms anyway. So let them be expressed by approximate and ever-changeable notions and terms. But as Pope Pius XII states, they would only vaguely hint at the truth, and at the same time also necessarily distort the truth. Such persons cannot see the absurdity of each system of philosophy expressing the truths of the faith in its own way, even if they contradict each other. Those who have an unbalanced or one-sided notion of the positive and the negative negatively protest that the encyclical Humani Generis is all too negative, inasmuch as it deals with error and the condemnation of error. They seem incapable of understanding that if one holds on to a positive truth, one must of necessity reject and condemn the opposing error, or the negation of that truth. One must necessarily be both positive and negative at the same time. For Pius XII condemned error because of his knowledge and love of the truth, and while he did point out so many of the modern errors and erroneous trends, he balanced that off with positive doctrine by stressing positive and corrective principles and remedies to offset the errors. To guide all theologians and teachers of religion, Pope Pius XII stresses the need of accepting the teachings of the scholastic theologians of the Middle Ages, because they are the ones who developed Catholic doctrine and who contributed so much to a correct understanding of the mysteries of the faith. The ordinary Catholic would not know it, but the correct Catholic doctrine, which has been taught for centuries in Catholic schools until the advent of the modernistic catechetics of our times, is precisely the doctrine taught and developed by the scholastics of the Middle Ages and by their successors in succeeding centuries. But the primary rule of faith, as it is called, is the infallible teaching of the magisterium of the Church. This means that the rule which we must go by, if we are to know the truth of the faith in all its fullness, is to accept the infallible teaching of the supreme authority of the Church. The lovers of novelty, says Pope Pius XII, show contempt for this supreme teaching authority or magisterium of the Church, and scornfully picture it as a hindrance to progress and an obstacle in the way of science. Nevertheless, the Holy Father declares this sacred magisterium must remain, in matters of faith and morals, the proximate and universal criterion of truth for every theologian, since to it has been entrusted by Christ the Lord the whole deposit of faith, sacred scripture and divine tradition, to be preserved, guarded, and interpreted. And the Holy Father adds that the faithful are also obliged to flee from those errors which more or less approach heresy. In other words, anything that begins to approach heresy or has the telltale smell of heresy must be carefully avoided. This duty, as the Holy Father deplores, is sometimes ignored as if it did not exist. As for the papal encyclicals, Pope Pius tells how the novelty seekers wrongly claim that the popes do not intend to settle disputed questions in their encyclicals, so we must go to the primitive sources, the writings of the fathers of the Church, for the answers. This may sound clever, the Holy Father states, but it is really a sophism, that is, something that has the appearance of truth, but it is really false. He admits that the popes have always left theologians free to discuss a variety of matters, but he adds, many points that were formerly open to dispute are such no longer. The Holy Father goes on to say, nor must it be thought that what is contained in encyclical letters does not of itself demand assent, on the pretext that the popes do not exercise in them the supreme power of their teaching authority. Rather, the Pope says, such teachings belong to the ordinary magisterium, of which it is true to say, he who hears you hears me. Very often, too, what is explained and emphasized in encyclical letters already pertains to Catholic doctrine for other reasons. By other reasons, he means infallible decisions of previous popes and councils. And once again, the Holy Father tells what must be our position in debated matters. But if the supreme pontiffs, he says, in their official documents, and an encyclical is an official papal document, purposely pass judgment on a matter debated until then, it is obvious to everyone that the matter, according to the mind and will of the same pontiffs, cannot be considered any longer a question open for discussion among theologians. An example of a matter once discussed and debated freely among theologians, but now officially settled by a pope, is right in the encyclical Humani Generis itself, and this is the theory of polygenism, as it is called, which is now a closed issue and must be unacceptable to Catholics. Polygenism is the false idea that the human race existing on this earth comes from more than one original couple. In other words, it means that Adam and Eve are not the first parents of the human race existing on this earth today. The opposite of the error of polygenism is called monogenism, which is the correct Catholic doctrine. Monogenism means that the human race comes from only one original couple called Adam and Eve. So if these two words, polygenism and monogenism, are too hard to handle, we still know the facts with which they deal. As Pope Pius XII declares, no Catholic can hold that after Adam there existed on this earth true men who did not take their origin through natural generation from him as from the first parent of all, or that Adam is merely a symbol for a number of first parents. The Holy Father tells why this theory, which he himself calls polygenism, is unacceptable. He explains that it is unintelligible how such an opinion can be squared with what the sources of revealed truth and the documents of the magisterium of the Church teach on original sin, which proceeds from sin actually committed by an individual Adam, and which passed on to all by way of generation, is in everyone as his own. As for the theory of evolution, the Holy Father states that the magisterium of the Church does not forbid true experts to discuss the possibility of the origin of the human body as coming from pre-existent and living matter, as he himself words it, but any such discussion must be done with gravity, moderation, and discretion. And he expressly states that the Catholic faith obliged us to hold that the human soul is directly created by God. The human soul does not and could not possibly evolve from something else. Furthermore, he declares that all must be prepared to submit to the judgment of the Church whenever the Church passes a judgment for or against upon the evolution of the first human body from some pre-existing living matter. Those who presume to assert that the theory of human evolution has already been proven in the domain of science go too far, the Holy Father declares, for it has not by any means proven as a fact. And such persons also act as if there is nothing about the formation of the bodies of Adam and Eve in the Scriptures, whereas the formation of those two bodies is given in detail in the book of Genesis. So this demands, as the Holy Father states, the greatest reserve and caution when speaking about the possibility of some kind of human evolution. The Holy Father says nothing about the evolution of the body of Adam from an ape or a monkey or other such brute animal, nor is it by any means necessary for him to do so, nor is it likely that evolution would take place in that way. Rather, all that would be necessary, if a genuine kind of human evolution were true, is that God allowed the body of Adam to develop under his personal guidance until it reached the state of development that he desired for it before he infused into it the human soul. Or as the book of Genesis expresses it, the breath of life. Thus, in the case of a true evolution of Adam's body, Adam would have been what we would call a subhuman being, but not a brute animal before the creation of his soul. The Holy Father also brings up the question of the exact nature of the historical books of the Old Testament, and especially of the book of Genesis, which tells of the creation of the world and of first man. He deplores the fact that certain scholars interpret these historical books too liberally and too boldly. He concentrates especially on the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis and declares that those chapters contain true history, even though it may not be history written in the way it has been written in later times than in our own times. The first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis contain, as the Holy Father reminds us, in the simple and figurative language adapted to the mentality of a people of low culture, the principal truths fundamental to our eternal salvation, and a popular description of the origin of the human race and of the chosen people. The Holy Father admits the possibility that the human authors of the Scriptures could have used the popular narratives or stories of the origin of the human race that were being passed around by word of mouth, but they would have done so only under the guidance of the Holy Spirit of God, and that he would have written only what was free of error. However, as the Holy Father makes it clear, such popular narratives or stories are by no means to be classed with myths or other such things, which are only the product, as he says, of an exuberant imagination. Some of the other errors and heresies listed by the Holy Father, which he calls the poison fruit of a love for novelty, are the following. First error, human reason is incapable of proving the existence of a personal God by arguments drawn from created things. Second error, the world had no beginning. Third error, God cannot foresee the free actions of men. Fourth error, it is doubtful whether angels are personal beings. Fifth error, it is doubtful that matter differs essentially from spirit. Sixth error, original sin, as well as all other sin, is not an offense against God. Seventh error, the real presence of Christ in the Holy Eucharist is only symbolic, and this is heresy. Eighth error, the consecrated bread and wine are only signs of the spiritual presence of Christ in the Eucharist, and this is also heresy. Ninth error, the mystical body of Christ and the Roman Catholic Church are not the same. Tenth error, it is not necessary to belong to the true church in order to be saved. The Holy Father states that these and similar errors are due to an indiscreet zeal for souls, as we have already pointed out, or to a false notion of science. He says that it is with a grieving heart that we must re-emphasize the truth for their benefit, that is, for the benefit of souls. Towards the end of his encyclical, which we have given some of the main highlights, the Holy Father once again expresses confidence that the majority of Catholic teachers are far removed from those errors which are being spread around today, that is, in 1950. But we know, to our sorrow, that so very many have betrayed his confidence. And then he expresses himself very strongly as he declares, "We charge bishops and superiors of religious orders, binding them most seriously in conscience, to watch carefully lest such opinions be aired in schools, in conferences, and in writings of any kind, and lest they be taught in any manner whatsoever to clergy or laity. Let professors in ecclesiastical institutes remember that they cannot with a tranquil conscience exercise the office of teaching entrusted to them unless they religiously accept the doctrinal norms which we have laid down and exactly observe them in the instruction of their students. Let them likewise instill into the minds and hearts of their pupils the reverence and submission due to the magisterium of the Church, which should guide them in their own daily labor." The Holy Father continues at the very end of his encyclical, "Let them strive with all their energy and zeal to further the progress of the branches which they teach, but let them also guard against overstepping the limits which we have established for the protection of the truth of the Catholic faith and doctrine. When face to face with new problems that are posed by modern culture and progress, let them engage in diligent research, but with the necessary prudence and caution. Finally, let them not indulge in a false Irenicism, or think that the dissident and erring can be happily brought back to the bosom of the Church if the whole truth found in the Church is not sincerely taught to all without corruption and diminution. If only all had listened to him. May the Lord bless you and give you peace."